It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, says, they have more morning glory than grass. What do they do?
Well, if they have more morning glory than grass, there's something, and it could, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but conditions exist on the lawn that favor morning glory over the grass, and that very well could be drought. So what I would do is this falls, we start to cool down and it's easier to keep the lawn green. I'd spray the morning glory out. Hopefully we get more winter moisture so we can irrigate a little more, but mow it 3 inches, get that lawn thickened up, fertilize spring and fall, you know, at least, and maybe if the lawn's used a lot one more time, but anything he can do or she can do to get the lawn healthy will fight against the morning glory.
Okay, on the topic of morning glory, do you have any advice on how to get it out of roses?
Yes, we have our video on our YouTube channel that will talk about removing morning glory from flower beds, and I would refer to our YouTube page and watch that video, and it will give you some good tips on what to do.
Yeah, KSL Greenhouse YouTube page. Let's go to Tamara in Riverton. Good morning, Tamara. What is your question this morning?
Hi, we planted four flowering pear trees last fall, and we did the root stimulator. If it got above 60 degrees, we would water it, and we were doing it through five-gallon buckets that had a small hole in it to kind of do a slow drip into it, and they've been doing great. And then this last year, just now, the leaves are all turning brown on the tops of them, and I'm not sure why.
It could be drought stress. What I would do is dig along the side of the tree and the side of the root ball and go down toward the bottom and just see how wet the soil is. And that will tell you really quickly if you're overwatering or underwatering. If the soil's on the drier side, maybe incorporate one more irrigation per week. If it's really wet, I would take one irrigation away.
Okay.
But those would be the things I'd check. I mean, the other problem you could be running into is fire blight, but would have shown up in June. And so if this just recently happened, it's more likely drought stress.
Yeah, it's just been in the last month.
Okay. So one other thing to consider is that you could be watering sufficiently and the trees just aren't keeping up with how hot and dry it's been. And so it just can't take enough water out of the soil. And so the leaves scorch a bit. But it sounds a little more like overwatering, but you need to dig and see what the soil looks like.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Tamara, thanks so much for your call. Our next listener wants to know what the difference is between turf-type tall fescue and regular tall fescue. They say one's more like a weed, right?
Yeah, they're the same species, but there's been a lot of breeding done on turf-type tall fescue so that the grass blades are more narrow and look a lot more like Kentucky bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pasture fescue or the regular tall fescue are the circles of broadleaf grass you get in your lawn that expand 6 inches to a foot every year. And that's what we'd use in a pasture. And the seeds can outcompete Kentucky bluegrass, but turf type tall fescue looks a lot more like Kentucky bluegrass. And even though they're the same species, it's through breeding. And so if you look at dogs, you can have poodles and labs and German shepherds and all sorts of different shapes and sizes, but they're all the same species. We can do the same thing with plants.
Okay. Next listener says their onion sets have gone to bloom. Should they pull them and let them dry out or wait until they're done blooming?
I would pull them. They could collect the seeds if they wanted to, but the onions think they're on their second year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go ahead and get them out. The onion, leaves have been started to fold over, and so you can pull them out and then cure them and then just bring them in and use them.
Next listener says, a friend gave them some seed pods from orange poppies. When should they open and scatter the seeds?
This fall, sometime in October, where the ground is cool and they won't germinate. They overwinter just fine and they'll germinate in the spring.
I would have said wait till spring, so okay.
They'll be fine in the ground over the winter. They could do it in the spring too, but if it's, you know, in late October, if you get a 50, 55 degree day, just break those open by maybe rubbing them in your hand and scatter the seed.
All right. Next person says they just bought a maple tree and it seems to have helicopter things that fall off. Can they get a different maple that doesn't have those, please?
No, they can't. That's, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
You know, it's really funny. They don't do those that for years a lot of times. Like,
no,
our neighbors had maple trees and it wasn't till recently, the homes are 30 years old, right? It wasn't until recently, 5 years ago, that they started dropping all of these helicopters.
Yes, and as the tree ages, they will do more seed, and they seem to be biennial, so you'll have 1 year where you have hardly any, and then the next year there are a lot, or you could go 3 or 4 years and not have a lot, and all of a sudden just have a heavy crop. But that is just the nature of maple trees.
Next listener says their garden wilts early in the day. I'm pretty sure they're talking about vegetable garden. Is it too late in the growing season to invest in shade cloth?
No, it'd be harder to put over it. And if it's squash that wilts, it's very normal for squash to wilt in the middle of the day and then rebound in the evening. It's just our humidity so low and the temperatures are high. It's a drought response or a response to heat. And as long as you have sufficient moisture in the soil, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it's wilting down, they need to check their soil moisture because most other plants shouldn't be doing that.
Next listener says, if you submit a sample to USU, how do you decide exactly where to take that sample? Should it be in the worst part or the problem area?
They need to go to the edge of the problem area so that they have both brown and green grass.
Oh.
So because we need to be able to look at the progression. And if you go to the middle of the patch that's been dead for 2 or 3 months, oftentimes you can't find anything there because the grass is decomposing and there's a whole bunch of fungi in there that decompose organic matter. So you need to go to the edge where you have the freshest dead
grass. I would have said the middle where it's the worst.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not the horticulturist.
Well, I hope, I mean, dead is dead, but if you can get something recently dead progressing to alive, that's the best case scenario for finding out what's going on.
Awesome. Okay, next listener says, how easy and practical is it to transition their yard to buffalo grass or other drought-tolerant turf?
You know,
this is Alan
much,
in America.
Yeah,
Fork,
you'd have to kill the grass, till it out, collect it, you know, rake it up. They would need to get down to bare soil.
Not very easy.
I think that the Kentucky bluegrass, if you water it correctly, it doesn't use a lot of water. You know, it's watering a couple times a week and things, but the advantage to Kentucky bluegrass is it is green from late March or April through mid-November.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo is green from mid to late May through late September. And so if you have a lot of kids playing on the lawn, buffalo grass, when it's dormant, will tolerate foot traffic, but not a lot. And so they may want to stay with Kentucky bluegrass if they're walking on the lawn and using it in the spring and fall.
This listener texted at the end of our WaterWise segment, and their question was, what about sprinkler type? What are the best? Ones that have heavier streams and less spray?
Well, I'm not sure where they're going with that on heavier streams, but anything that uses reduced pressure as they put out the irrigation water is less likely to turn the water to a mist that evaporates really quickly. And so low pressure and large droplets are always better than high pressure and small droplets.
Okay, I think that did answer the question. Next listener says, how long between Q4 Plus and 2,4-D?
How long between them?
Yeah, I guess applications.
Q4 Plus has 2,4-D in it.
So again, how long would they wait even if they want it? So that makes,
you wouldn't double that
don't
up
double
because
up that
Q4
dose.
Plus already has 2,4-D, but the product you're looking for in there is the quinclorac, and you're using it in the fall when it's cooler. Now, if you're going to spray now, you do not use Q4 Plus or any other 2,4-D product because they volatilize into the air. So if they're spraying now, that Image All-in-One Weed Killer is about the only one that's relatively safe to use when it's hotter because it does not have dicamba or 2,4-D in it.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back with our final segment of the show. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, spending your Saturday morning with us. Follow-up question, Ton, on the 2,4-D question. This person says they already sprayed the 2,4-D, so wait until fall to spray the Q4 Plus. They sprayed on a non-windy day in the evening and at one lower setting, and yes, probably they should be grounded, but their yard is bordered by driveways.
Well, that 2,4-D can that feeling drift for hundreds of yards.
Okay.
And that's why we're saying don't spray 2,4-D in the summer. I've noticed that in the evening, if you do just a little patch here or there, and it's cool and it has all night, you're probably okay. But if you wholesale spray 2,4-D, even in the evening, you still oftentimes, for whatever reason, run into some problems. Less likely to be you can. And so we just don't generally recommend wide-scale spraying of 2,4-D products in the summer.
Okay.
With that being said, I don't think that the person needs to go stand in the corner or anything.
No dunce hat for you.
No dunce hat. I'm the one that usually has the dunce hat on, but
you've been good today.
You've
been well behaved.
Snarky
moment.
Yeah.
That's good.
So what I would just consider that 2,4-D also can only be sprayed twice a year on your lawn. That's the restriction on it. And so if they've already sprayed it, they could use that Image All-in-One Weed Killer or wait for fall and do a second application. But the labels usually say do not spray on your lawn more than twice a year.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, where is a good place to get more info on drip systems? They put one in, but the bushes are really dry and they're worried about the trees.
This is really difficult because a lot of the information out there isn't super practical.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're going to have to do.
What about like Weber Basin water or someplace like that?
There's just
not
enough a lot
there, right?
Mike and Sheridan and me and JD are working on some fact sheets that will be coming out. Sheridan and I and JD put one together on vegetable gardens. Mike and I are working on one for shrubs with Sheridan, but it'll be a few months. But I mean, all you can really do is dig around the shrub and see if it's too dry and maybe add another emitter or two around there to see if that will help.
Okay, let's go to Bob, who's on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, Bob. What is your question?
Hey, good morning. I have a cherry tree that's just over 3 years old, and it's got about a 5-inch diameter base above the ground, and I'm seeping clear honey-colored sap about 5 inches above the ground and then up at one of the branches off the trunk, and it's water falling off. It's quite a bit.
Well,
what do you do?
Sometimes cherry trees and other stone fruits have a condition just called gamosis, and they just have a tendency to bleed. There could be some borers that got into it, and it's trying, the tree's trying to drown them out. Or
okay.
There could be some disease in there, either a Pseudomonas or Cytospora. And what you're going to need to do is where they're bleeding is cut the bark away and see if it's dark brown or black underneath.
Okay.
And also maybe look carefully. You don't want to chop your tree up, but maybe look for some borer tunnels and see if you have that in there.
Okay, but Pseudomonas, after you carve it off and you check for the dark wood and get that, which would probably dead wood, and you coat it with that?
You cut it out.
Cut it out.
Yeah, if they're small wounds. But
okay.
You need to do some investigation because it could be normal and it just is what the trees do, but you could have borers or that Pseudomonas or Cytospora in there.
Okay, the tree is healthy looking. It's beautiful. It's got dark green leaves. The trunk looks good from what I inspected early this morning, but it's got that sap, so I'll do that. I'll take it. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob, for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, how can they get rid of tall fescue?
Spread out Roundup's about the option. You know, there's other products out there that I'm a little leery of. You know, you have to buy $100 worth or something, but just the safest thing to do is to either smother it out with a board or something and just leave it over the top if you don't want to spray, or use a Roundup type spray and kill it, dig it out, and reseed or resod that area.
All right. Kevin is in West Valley. Good morning, Kevin. How can we help you?
Oh, please. My neighbor has a tree of heaven. Please help me. How do I stop it?
Is the neighbor willing to get rid of the tree?
No. I mean, I don't know, but it's tall, developed.
Well, I mean, the only thing that you can really do is limb the tree up at the property line. The neighbor's responsible to pay for that. And because there's so many legal issues, yes, you could kill the tree, but is the neighbor going to sue you for thousands of dollars? Because you can actually place a dollar value on a tree because the tree is dead, and you'd need to work with the neighbor, hopefully, to find some solutions.
So you're saying the only solution is to get rid of that first...
Well, is it coming up in your lawn all over the place?
Everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, spraying it out. It's because the tree is there, no matter what, you're going to have continual problems unless the tree is killed and gotten rid of.
Is there a good product to address the sprouts as they come up?
A Sucker Stopper. It would be one, and there's competing brands, and it will help slow them down. But if you dab Roundup or something on there, it could get into the root system and damage the tree. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying don't do that, but you could run into legal issues if the neighbors want the tree and they know that, especially you maliciously applied Roundup to roots and things and root suckers, and that's caused damage.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'll discuss it with my neighbor. I'm not on horrible terms with it.
Yeah, and that would be a good thing. I mean, be sure
very
of just
satisfying answer, right?
Pulling them up, spraying them out on your end is about all you can do if the tree isn't removed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin, for your call this morning. Debbie would like to know. She has pumpkins growing in pots on her patio. She says they're doing okay, but they probably need more space, and she wants to transplant them into a garden bed. Is that, what do you think about that?
If they could dig a hole the same shape as the pot and then cut the pot away and gently set the pumpkin into the soil, they could do that. You know, if they're in terracotta, they would have to carefully break the pot. There's not really a practical way, but they would have to cut the pot away so that they could get the root ball out and just gently put it into the garden.
And with it being this hot, what would be the special needs for transplanting then?
Well, it'd be the same initially, or very close to what they would be watering in the pot. A little less because you have soil, but you'd probably have to water two or three times a week at least until that could establish more into the garden.
Next listener says, do they need to worry about soil type when planting a hackberry tree?
No. Hackberries are one of the most adaptable trees we can grow that's still a decent tree. Now, if you're planting it into a salty soil, swampy area, maybe, but otherwise it'll grow almost anywhere on the Wasatch Front.
Okay. Chris lives in Bingham Canyon, has a question about a fast-growing plant that they could use as a privacy screen. They do have chain-link fences at one point, which is about 10 feet tall, and they like to put up some greenery. They have an open palette. There's nothing in the yard right now, so just some suggestions.
So they're looking for a hedge?
They're looking for a fast-growing plant to use as a privacy screen. Not necessarily a hedge, because they do have those chain-link fences.
All right. There are many things they could use. Arborvita would be one. Cheyenne privet would be another one. Those get fairly tall and grow fast. Golden privet would be one. They could even go with some trees like the sentinel oaks that would be good. They get about 25 to 30 feet. It depends on the size, but there are many things that will grow about 5 feet wide. Skyrocket junipers. There's all sorts of things.
So with that open palette, they have a lot of choices.
They do.
How would you suggest someone get started on something like that?
Get with their significant other and decide what they like. because there's, I've seen a lot of people conflict on, you know, I like this, but they don't. And, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on.
First thing you need to do is make sure you agree on things.
Decide on the height and width of something that they want, whether they want it evergreen or deciduous.
All right. That's it. Show is up, and we'll be back next week from 8 to 11. Have a great weekend, Tom.
You too.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.